G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, and this is episode 115. And just before I get on to today's exciting guest, I just wanted to give a big shout out to the Fasting Highway Facebook community members. It's a really good vibe in that group, and we're growing quite rapidly, and we're approaching the 6,000 member mark there, and we've got people from all corners of the world in the group and some very knowledgeable fasters. So if you're looking to get some information on intermittent fasting, or you just want to get started and have some support on your journey, or you are on the journey and you just need a little bit of help, then come and join us there at the Fasting Highway Facebook community. Also, folks, as you heard briefly in the intro there, if you enjoy the podcast, you might enjoy my book. That's the Fasting Highway book, which you can get on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. And if you are in Australia or New Zealand, you can get it at the website, and that's www.thefastinghighway.com. Okay, let's get on to today's amazing guest, and I'm really glad to welcome back Sarah Cull. And Sarah is a New Zealand registered nurse, and she's been working with intermittent fasting for many of her clients since early 2018, and in particular to support those with type 2 diabetes or obesity-related health concerns. And Sarah's own journey with intermittent fasting has been quite amazing also. And she's going to talk about that, and also we're going to run through some of the amazing case studies that Sarah's been doing down there in New Zealand and the incredible results that she's got. And Sarah is one of the leading lights in the South Pacific for intermittent fasting, and we're very glad to have her today. So here to tell us all about her story and catch up with her, and also about her work down there with intermittent fasting and type 2 diabetes, is the incredible Sarah Cull. Oh, g'day, Sarah, and welcome back to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me back, Graham. It's always a pleasure to chat.
Always a pleasure to chat to you, Sarah, and you're a good friend of ours here at the Fasting Highway, and you're doing great work there in New Zealand, which we're going to talk about in this podcast. So Sarah was on episode 12 of this podcast, if anybody wants to go back and listen to the full episode of that. But Sarah, what we might do in this catch-up episode with you is sort of give us a quick recap of your experience with fasting and sort of where you started and where you're at now.
Yeah, so as you know, I started back, we must be coming up 5 years for fasting myself. So I started to lose a bit of weight to get my blood pressure down, just to get things, you know, behaving a bit better. And I had really great success with that. I think within a month of starting fasting, my blood pressure had normalized. It had been creeping up and I didn't want medication. And then I lost a lot of weight. I think I'm sitting at about 20 kilos from my start weight back then. And then I started to look into it more for my patients. So being a registered nurse here in New Zealand, we see a lot of obesity-related diseases, including type 2 diabetes. And the research around intermittent fasting was looking really good. And it looked to be something quite different with really, really good results. So having done all that research, I started my first patient on it about 4 years ago and have been working with fasting mostly for our type 2s as well as our obese patients over the last 4 years with just phenomenal successes and some really great stories from that.
Yeah, okay. So for people out there listening that may not know a lot about diabetes, just tell us, what is type 2 diabetes?
So type 2 diabetes, there's two types, or there's a couple of types, but the two main types are type 1, which is where you're born or you develop your body stops producing insulin. So you have no insulin, you need insulin. It's quite different from type 2. So type 2 is where more often than not, you are having high levels of insulin. And because your insulin's high all the time, the body stops listening and the insulin stops working. Now, of course, insulin is the hormone that brings down the blood sugar. It helps move blood sugar into muscles, your brain cells for energy. And so when your body's not listening to insulin, of course, what else is there to do but produce more insulin? So the body pumps out more insulin. But of course, over time, that becomes a vicious cycle and it works less and less, and then you produce more and it keeps working less and less to a point where you then get diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So your body no longer listens to insulin, your blood sugars shoot up high. And when your blood sugars are up high for longer periods of time, that's when we get those diagnoses of type 2 diabetes. So high blood sugar is the sort of key indicator of type 2 diabetes.
Okay, and what's the current sort of standard treatment if a person's got type 2 diabetes in the medical community?
So for the last, 40 plus years, the focus was initially diet and exercise, so move more, eat less, the calories in, calories out. We've seen that over the last four decades, that doesn't work. Our nations are getting bigger. The developed world has more and more cases of type 2 diabetes, and people are more overweight than ever before. So we know that the calories in, calories out doesn't work. And more often than not, within 3 months of diagnosis, even if a patient's tried with diet and exercise, they more often than not come back with the same or worse result and therefore need medication. So they're often put on something fairly low-key to start with, depending on their results, but often it's metformin here in New Zealand. And then they'll be given other things like glucoside. And eventually, quite often, and probably more often than not, over a long period of time, our patients who are type 2 end up needing insulin to bring their blood sugars down.
Yeah, it's something that's very prevalent in the world, isn't it? You mentioned obesity and that sort of thing. And in New Zealand, is the obesity rates been climbing?
Yeah, absolutely. It has worldwide. But here in New Zealand, it absolutely has. And sadly for us, our Māori and Pacific peoples are overrepresented. And that's something I'd like to change, in that they are tending to be more obese than the European population. But absolutely, yes, our obesity and type 2 diabetes is climbing in New Zealand. Yep.
Okay, so just sort of give us a picture. You're working in a clinic there in Auckland and somebody comes and sees you that has a problem with type 2 or they're morbidly obese and then they come to you. How do you sort of explain intermittent fasting to them and how it could be beneficial for what they've actually got?
Yeah, so we talk often, the clients I see have been down the old path and have found it hasn't worked. And quite often I see them either because they're on such high doses of insulin and it's, you know, they're gaining weight because, of course, insulin is a fat storage hormone. So when you put on insulin, you'll always gain a bit of weight. Or they're getting very close to needing insulin and they don't want to go down that path. So that's when I often see them. And we talk about why what they've done doesn't work. So quite often that makes them feel better. A lot of people have a lot of guilt and blame for the way they are. And actually that's not always the case. And I think they've often been misguided. So we talk a little bit about why what they've done hasn't worked. And then we talk about why fasting will work. So we talk about the insulin, the raised insulin, in their body being ignored, in other words, insulin resistance. And then we go into how we would go about lowering that insulin so that your body can start working through that excess sugar and the stored fat in the body. And I never jump in with, so you just don't eat for 16 hours, because I think that makes people balk at that, and they don't always like that. So we always start with that science stuff. We talk about what we need to do, and then we say, you know, so when do you finish dinner is often how I say it, and they'll tell, you know, that might be 7 o'clock at night, and I'll say, so what you do then is you stop eating. And then you're not going to eat again until 11 the next morning. So you've only got a few hours after you wake up. And often that's a little bit easier to hear than you're not eating for 16 hours.
I know you're working with mainly, predominantly Murray and Pacific Islanders in your sort of clinic there. So just give us a bit of a sort of rundown on your clinic. Have you got the doctors on board there with the intermittent fasting, and how does all that work?
Yeah, so I work in two clinics here in Auckland, South Auckland, which is well known for high rates of diabetes and obesity. So my first clinic is, they've been incredibly supportive from day one. We've had some amazing success with our Māori and Pacific patients. They all refer to me, all the nurses and the doctors refer to me. I've got a nurse practitioner who is really supportive, and she knows a fair bit. She fasts herself, so she'll put her patients onto it as well at that clinic. And we sort of work together. You know, I'll have patients where they just can't fast, they just can't commit to it, for whatever reason, they can't get their head around it. And for those ones, I'll flick them back to the doctor and say, look, this isn't working. Can we get them some medication? Their blood sugars are shooting up and they're not fasting. We need to intervene. And vice versa. So they'll have someone who really doesn't want the medication and they want to try lifestyle, and they'll flick them over to me. So it's really awesome. And then the other clinic I work in is similar. So I run clinics there and they refer through to me. They'll book them in on my template and we work together. I do have a traditional diabetes nurse at that clinic, and we work quite closely together too, because of course she'll have patients who don't want the medication, who don't, you know, diet and exercise is not working, and she'll say, hey, look, why don't you go and catch up with Sarah, and vice versa. You know, I've got patients who just for whatever reason won't fast, and so I'll flick them back to her. So we've got a really good flow of patients through that clinic with diabetes and or obesity.
Yeah, do you often talk about your own sort of story and what you've done with intermittent fasting when you're trying to explain it to them?
Yeah, look, I often will mention it, not at the start. I often go through all the science and everything first, and then quite often towards the end of the consult, I say, look, I've been fasting for 4 or 5 years now, and I'll just let them know. And often I'll do that in particular if I can tell someone's a little bit skeptical about whether or not they could achieve this long term. And when they hear that I've done it for 4 years, I only generally eat once a day. You know, I think that makes them realize that it is achievable and that you can commit to that long term.
Yeah, let's just strip it back, Sarah, to when you first started with patients. You mentioned it was 4 years ago, roughly, when you started treating your first patient. And that obviously came about from your passion with intermittent fasting and the research that you've done. So was it like a light bulb moment where you just thought, this may really work for type 2 diabetes patients, or how did that come about?
Yeah, it really was. I previously to fasting, I didn't love working with type 2 diabetics, and I always, so my whole career, had felt that what we were doing didn't work, but I didn't know any different, and no one really did back then. We were always told that type 2 diabetes is a long-term chronic condition that has no end in sight. It always gets worse. And so when I started to see that actually that's not the case, it was a real light bulb moment for me to know that what we've done doesn't work, and to know that what we can do really can work. You know, it really changed my perspective on working with type 2 diabetics. I really felt for the first time that we could help them and we could get them off medication and improve their life tenfold. And so, yeah, absolutely light bulb moment.
Yeah, and is there a standard sort of procedure that you go through in terms of intermittent fasting? Like, is there a sort of set protocol, or do you have to tailor make it to each patient?
Yeah, it's a little bit tailor-made, and it depends a little bit on what the patient presents with. So if they've got, you know, really high HbA1c. They might be on a ton of insulin and quite a few other medications. So we do need to be a bit careful with fasting because, of course, if you're not eating but you take your insulin, you're going to end up having hypoglycemia attacks, which can be really dangerous. And there's a few things. So there's a few safety factors. So it does depend a little bit on that. But for the most part, I start everyone 16-8, so 16 hours fasting, and then they'll tend to have two meals in that 8 hours. And that's just for compliance, and it's just to get them going. If you rush people and you put them up too quickly to a longer fast, which often they need, you know, with such bad diabetes results, but if you push them too fast and you know, within 3 days of not eating for 20 hours, they'll walk away from it. It's too hard for them. So we start with 16 hours, and most people can achieve that. And then we go from there, and I keep close eye on them for the first probably month at least. We check in weekly, and then we sort of adapt it to suit and depending on their results. So by that 3 month mark, we order more bloods and organize follow ups and make sure we're getting progress. And then we sort of, we tweak depending on the results and what we're trying to achieve for that patient.
Yeah, I know growing up in South Auckland myself in New Zealand, you know, obviously I knew a lot of Polynesian and Maori people, and food is such a huge part of their life. You know, it's their culture, and like eating is like an Olympic sport for some of them. And like I knew many, many of them that would just eat all day. So that must be so foreign when you first say, look, you don't eat for this period of time.
Yeah, and I think that is true, and I think some people struggle to get their head around it, despite the work we do, and I think that's probably one of the big failures is what we have as patients who just can't commit to that. They just mentally cannot make that commitment. But I think what I try and explain is a traditional diabetes diet is really, you know, small portions, low fat. You know, I say to them, you can either eat salad and chicken 3 times a day, or you can eat your normal food once a day and, you know, make it work for you. If you've got a family party and you've got a hungy put down, go and enjoy it. Absolutely. But enjoy it in your eating window. And I think once you sort of point out they can eat fairly normally, they can move their window and adapt to make it work for them, for their lifestyle and their whānau, then that makes a difference. And I think that's where I get a lot of success, is for those people who go, okay, I want to make a change. I don't want to eat salad and chicken for the rest of my life. So how can I make this work? And I think fasting's often the answer for those people.
Yeah, and with their eating windows, Sarah, when you go into that, do you sort of try to encourage them to sort of avoid certain foods, given the fact they are type 2 diabetics, or you just mentioned there, you say to them, hey, just go to enjoy it. So how do you sort of explain that side of things?
So the very first consult I do, I don't really talk too much about food. Often enough for these patients is that they're not eating for 16 hours. And if I say to them, you know, you need to cut all these foods out too, I think that's often too much for them. So the first consult, we don't talk a lot about food. I tell them to have two meals. I explain that obviously if they sit outside McDonald's and eat half the menu in those two meals, then that's not going to lead to great success. But if they stick to just two meals, often these people are drinking fizzy through the day, so they've cut that out for at least 16 hours. And often we see enough results just doing that, that it gives them the sort of confidence to keep going and go further. And it's not until probably at the 3 month mark where we get some results back with the bloods that I might start to say, okay, what are we eating here? Do we need to make any changes or not? And we go from there.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the cases that you sort of have, if you don't mind sharing that. Just I know that you presented on that to some doctors in the South Island last time we spoke in episode 12, and I know that you're about to go to Rotorua later on this year to present again. And obviously intermittent fasting in New Zealand is probably becoming more widely known. So just run us through some of your case studies, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a few here. So I'll talk about my very first patient because I've only just had an update on him, and he was 4 years ago. So 4 years ago, I got the consent of the doctors that I was working with, and I started this young man on intermittent fasting with, I think his HbA1c was around 115, so it's quite high. We put him on metformin, and I started him on the fasting, and within 3 months, his results were phenomenal. I believe by memory, they were about half of what they had been. And by the end of that year, or probably not even a year, it was about 8 months, he'd reversed his type 2 diabetes. He wasn't obese, but he'd lost about 8 kilos. Anyway, I saw his wife just a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't heard from this patient since about 3 years ago. And she informed me that he is still in the pre-diabetic range, so still reversed that type 2. He's doing really, really well and has kept that weight off, and still fasting and loving it. So that was really nice to hear, because that's probably, well, it is my longest patient that I've had. I've sort of got a few coming up 2 to 3 years now, but it's nice to hear that in 4 years he's still managed to do well. So one of my recent patients, I just started him in September last year, 62-year-old male, he's type 2 diabetic, and he'd been diagnosed in 2008, so he's been diabetic for a long time. He's on insulin, he was on a long-acting insulin, quite a high dose at night, and then he was on the fast-acting insulin twice a day with his two main meals, as well as a couple of medications. So he was sort of filled up with all the medications he could have. His HbA1c was still high at 79, so he wasn't making a lot of progress, and his weight was 116, so needed to lose a bit of weight, and obviously wanted to get, improve his type 2. He was very skeptical, and if you ask him, he will tell you that. I think he rolled his eyes when I was talking to him, and I don't think he truly believed what I said, but he thought he'd give it a go, and he did. So he started in September. By October, so a month later, his blood sugars were down to between six and nine. He'd stopped his fast-acting insulin, and his long-acting insulin had dropped 10 units, so he was doing better, and his HbA1c was 66, so he'd had a great improvement in just a month. And then I followed him up again in December. It was last year, HbA1c down to 58. He was off all of his insulin, and he's lost 10 kilos. So he's only recently, started fasting, but significant improvement in that 3 months. And he still continues. So I'm waiting to see what his next HbA1c is, but he's doing really well. I have a 46-year-old female, so type 2 diabetic. She was diagnosed in 2009. Now, her HbA1c was pretty good. It was sitting at 53, so that's actually really well controlled. But she was on insulin, sort of average doses, twice a day, as well as a short-acting insulin at lunch and dinner as well as medication. So she sort of wanted to reduce her insulin and lose some weight, was why I saw her. So her start weight was 92 kilos, and she started fasting in April 2020, so we're going back 2 years now. By the 1st of December, she had lost 10 kilos. She'd stopped all her insulin in October, and her HbA1c was now 45, so she'd sort of reversed that diabetes, was pre-diabetic. I saw her again last year in September. HbA1c was 44, so still pre-diabetic, no insulin at all, and she'd stopped all her other medication, and her weight was down to 77. So that was a really good improvement for her. So off all her drugs, pre-diabetic, and lost a ton of weight. So it's really good to see that.
With the fasting side of it, Sarah, do you really stress the importance of the clean fast with the patients?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had cases where the patient really just couldn't commit to a clean fast. They had a bit of milk in their coffee, or some lemon in their water, you know, just something that you wouldn't think would make a difference, but it really does. And I've seen it time again where I finally convince them to drop that, whatever it is, the crutch they're leaning on for those fasts. And as soon as they're clean, we see a significant improvement, especially for our type 2 diabetics. So absolutely, clean fast always. But, you know, there are a few patients who I just know need that crutch. You know, if they're going to do it, the only way they can do it is to have a cup of tea with the milk in it. And then I say to them, we'll review that in 3 months. And then we get rid of it because it is just that important.
Yeah. And once they do get rid of it, you notice a significant difference, or do they tell you that they notice a significant difference?
Yeah. Oh, huge difference. So we often see they've had a stall. Or their results aren't what you would expect. So, you know, I've done this long enough now to know where our results go. And if I'm not really seeing results and they're telling me they're fasting, often it is exactly that. They're not clean fasting. So, yeah, as soon as they go clean, we see an improvement in their blood results and often a drop in weight again. So sometimes they'll have an initial drop in weight, and then they'll stall. And when we get rid of the milk in their tea, that weight goes down again. So, yeah, absolutely makes a difference.
So with the eating window, as we talked about before, and you said at the start, you don't really talk about food that much. But as you go along with these patients, and if they are stalling or whatever, or they're struggling, how do you tell them to self-examine in their window, and how do they also learn to eat to that sort of full point and not stuffed?
We talk a little bit. I mean, I'm not a dietitian, right? So I'm always a bit careful as to how far I go with diet advice because, you know, I think there's such a variety of advice and one size does not fit all. So I'm a little bit careful with it. But we talk about whole natural foods, so selecting foods that are not processed, they're not packaged, you know, things like plenty of fruit and veggies, lean meats, good healthy fats. We talk about those kinds of things. More often than not, I will look at their diet, so I'll get them to keep a diet for me, you know, a diary for a week or two. And then we'll say, okay, well, what changes can we make? You know, you're having a pie for lunch every day. Why don't we cut that out and look at something else? Or why don't we even just cut that out every other day to start with and see what we can do to change that? So often I will adapt what they're doing as opposed to give them a meal plan, because I don't think meal plans, like I said, one size does not fit all. And I think it's more important to work with the individual around what they're doing. But I have to say, for the majority of my patients, they get such good results that half of them I wouldn't be able to tell you what they eat. I don't know. And I guess it doesn't matter if you're getting phenomenal weight loss, you're reversing your type 2 diabetes. I mean, obviously things, you're doing something right. So carry on.
Yeah, I know I've seen a couple of patients of yours in our groups and they look fantastic. And they just seem to have such a joy of life. They're out exercising or walking up hills and just so happy that they've reversed this sort of poor health. And is it something that once they actually do and they reverse their diabetes that did I have to have sort of be careful of things that may trigger something that's related to diabetes? And
yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, if you're eating high sugar, high carbohydrate foods, you're putting yourself at more risk. And you'll notice I never say cure, because I think once you've had diabetes diagnosed, it will always sit there. It's almost like it will lay dormant if you can reverse it. So we can reverse it. We can get your blood sugars back to normal. We can get you off medication with fasting. But I think if you either stopped fasting or if you suddenly ate cake every day with ice cream, then perhaps, yeah, you absolutely would see that. But I don't see that often. Sometimes we'll get a slight increase in HbA1c and we might tweak a couple of things. We might say, hey, what's going on? Quite often it's just that they've let their window slip. So they've sort of been eating one meal a day. Their blood sugars are going up because suddenly they're actually eating over 6 hours instead of three or four or whatever it may be. So quite often there'll be a reason for it. I had one patient who's went up a bit, and actually he'd added a smoothie every day. And of course that's got plenty of fruit with all those natural sugars, and that's increased his HbA1c. So we cut that back out and off he went again. So yeah, we often have a few tweaks, but I think, you know, it will always be there in the background. And I think the only way to keep it away is to be sensible, to keep an eye on your bloods, and to keep fasting.
Yeah, and like everything, Sarah, nothing ever gets 100% great results. What sort of percentage do you think of the patients that you're treating with intermittent fasting and have type 2 that have sort of been quite successful at it?
So I would say, and I could probably quite honestly say, that for every single patient that fasts and fasts well, so they clean fast, they do it properly, and they follow the sort of process. So if they get to 16 hours, we get a good improvement. And then I say, you actually need to go to one meal a day, and they do it. I would say every single one of them get really good results. That's 100%. I could say that 100% of them do. But of course, there are a ton of people out there who just cannot achieve that. So they just, for whatever reason, can't commit to a fast. They, you know, they're irregular with their fasting. They might do 3 or 4 days and then have a week off. They might not clean fast. So all of those people, of course, you won't get the results. But for those who commit to it and do it, I would say, without a doubt, I'm yet to come across someone who hasn't had an improvement. And most of them are fairly significant improvement.
Yeah, we do see those very high rates of success with intermittent fasting, don't we? And I think when I hear of people that are struggling, there's usually two places. It's either during the fast or it's in the eating window where, let's face it, if you've got an eating window of 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, even a 1 hour eating window, you can do a lot of damage in an hour if you're really just binge eating, if you like. And it takes a bit of experience and a bit of practice to learn to eat to that, you know, satiety, and then stopping and listening to your body and appetite correction and all of that. But with these patients that have been successful, do you find it's a bit of a snowball effect? I mean, they're going out in the community and people are saying, hey, bro, what's going on with you? And they sort of come looking for you, or they try to do intermittent fasting as well. It must be a real snowball effect.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we, as you know, I've got my online Facebook group just for New Zealanders. So I keep it in Kiwi land, just because I've got a little bit of a level of accountability with my patients on there than a lot of groups don't have. So I try and just keep it to New Zealanders. But what I see is, yes, like you say, they'll go out for lunch and they haven't seen someone for a long time, and they say, wow, you're looking fantastic, what are you doing? And they'll have a chat about the fasting, and often they'll then come on and join my group and learn a bit about it and jump on board themselves. We often get partners that jump on. Mine certainly did. After 3 weeks of me fasting, he joined the bandwagon and still fasts today. My parents fast, so they join my bandwagon. My sisters, a lot of my friends do, a lot of my colleagues do, or have started even recently. So for sure, there's an absolute sort of, gosh, what am I missing out on here? I want some of this. And we see that a lot. And even more so of our patients who are getting life-changing results. We often see partners and children, even not, you know, adult children. So, because of course fasting's not for young children, but I often see adult children being sent there by mum or dad, and you know, getting in touch with me, or vice versa. We'll often get dad sent to me because he's got diabetes and the son's just reversed his. So yeah, really, really cool stories like that. And I love seeing that.
Hell's bells. I'll have to get the whole family on, Sarah. We'll have to have a group session with the podcast one day. But that's amazing, and it's fantastic to hear that in New Zealand. And do you find that there's more members of the medical community in New Zealand actually getting on board with IF and treating obesity and type 2?
Yeah, I really do. And I think that's changed a lot in the last year, maybe 18 months. When I first started this, I knew of maybe one other in the country that sort of did it a bit. I hear of it a little bit more now. I have people say to me, my doctor's put me onto this. I have doctors that know of me and I don't know of them. So they're hearing what I'm sort of teaching, because of course I do teach throughout medical community. So, you know, it might be that a practice nurse heard my lecture and they'll go and talk to their doctor, and then their doctor gets on board and they'll start doing that as well. So it is absolutely, increasing, but I think it's slow, and I'd like it to be faster. But, you know, we just work one doctor at a time, I think, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. And I know when my doctor had never heard of intermittent fasting, and her jaw nearly fell on the floor when I went to see her after I lost the weight, and then I told her. And then the next thing I know, all these doctors in the medical clinic, they all knew about it. And I went there to see another doctor one day, and he's got the Fasting Highway book up on the screen, and he's going, oh, Graham, you know, really been telling people about this and, you know, about your story and everything else. And it was just so amazing to hear that. And then I'd meet people and they'd say, oh, I heard about intermittent fasting through your doctors. And I just thought that was so great. And do you have any negativity towards fasting in New Zealand from the medical community?
Do you know, just a couple of weeks ago, one of our major news article, you know, newspapers printed an article on fasting, and it wasn't a bad article. Like, it sort of suggested it was not too bad to do, and there's some good studies around it. But they interviewed a diabetes doctor somewhere in the country. I think he might have been in the South Island. And he's obviously never had any experience with fasting, obviously hasn't done it with any of his patients, and he suggested that for type 2 diabetics it wasn't a good idea. And it's so disheartening that that's printed, because it's the opposite of what's true. And what a shame that that article was out there, because of course it's, you feel like it's undoing the work that I'm doing. It's sort of probably put a lot of people off who might otherwise have looked into fasting for their diabetes. I was actually interviewed by a reporter about my work, but it hasn't gone to print yet. She's forwarded it and sent it through to the news article. So I'm not sure if or when that will be published, but I'm hoping that'll help again counteract some of that negative feedback. But in regards to the rest of it, no. I mean, I think once you show the work that you've done, the success that you've done, and I guess the longer I do it and the bigger I get with it, the more sort of belief you gain from others, I think. You know, when you're starting out, you say, well, I've done it for 3 weeks and I've lost 2 kilos. Well, people aren't going to really care so much. But, you know, I can say to them, I've done this for 4 or 5 years. I've got, you know, hundreds of case studies. I've got thousands of people on a group who do really well with it. So you sort of, I think people start to believe you a bit more. You get a bit of history in there, and you don't get the pushback the same.
Yeah, you've got a fantastic group. I'm a proud member. And
yes,
I see it's growing very rapidly, and which is fantastic in New Zealand. And it makes me feel great to be a New Zealander and see that and see all those success stories that you have. And speaking of which, I mean, obviously you're collating all these stories, and at some point I guess you'll put them into a document or a paper or some sort of, you know, book maybe, or just to be able to get that message out, because the proof's in the pudding with these case studies that you have, surely.
Yeah, I'm really keen to publish at some point. I have a busy life, so I am a mum to 2 young kids. We recently bought one of the children a pony, so that takes up a bit of time. And of course, with COVID, we're just starting our Omicron outbreak here in New Zealand. It's just starting to ramp up. And so, plus we had the Delta recently with COVID. So I've been doing a lot more nursey stuff with that, and working with isolation and swabbing and immunizing and all that sort of stuff. So my fasting's taken a slight backseat to that, or I was looking to write a book, but I think that probably won't happen this year. But it's there in the background, and I'm keeping my data, and I'm sort of just prepping for that. But yeah, absolutely. I want to publish and get the word out there more throughout New Zealand for sure.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it all, Sarah. You're a busy mum, you know, working, nursing during this COVID emergency and so forth, and working in the clinic and everything else you do. And I'm sure when you get some time that it'll be great to collate all this and get it out, because I really feel that's a missing point. Because once we can actually show and demonstrate, you know, how it is that people with these case studies that you've got and you're presenting to this conference in Rotorua, I mean, you only have to start turning around 5-10 doctors and they go away and they turn around another 5 or 10. And it really starts snowballing. And I think what you're doing there in New Zealand is fantastic. And I often hear you described as the Jim Stevens of New Zealand. And for people in North America listening to this, Sarah is probably the leading advocate for intermittent fasting in New Zealand. And you're doing a wonderful job down there. And your own clinic where you work, I mean, are your doctors, do you find getting more invested in intermittent fasting as you're going along with this? They're seeing the results come through right in front of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So just recently, I think it was either early this year or maybe it was December, one of my doctors has started fasting herself and doing really, really well. And I think just seeing her patients coming through with some really good results, some results that are longer as well. So we're starting to see patients in that clinic up to sort of 2 years now of their fasting. And I think that's really inspirational. So the doctors are really supportive that I work with. I think that for the most part, they all refer to me when they find someone that is suitable. Even just our patients with things like fatty liver, you know, fatty liver can be greatly improved with fasting. So I often see them as well. But yeah, the doctors are really invested now. And I think, you know, once COVID settles down, there'll be more space to do, to increase my consults. But at the moment, of course, you know, I am needed as a nurse as well. So it is a tricky time for us here in New Zealand. But fingers crossed that settles sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it must be frustrating at times knowing what you know and seeing all these results in these people and doing what you're doing. And you know that type 2 diabetes, people don't have to suffer as much as what they're suffering. I mean, I've never been diabetic, right? But if I was, and then I knew about this and I saw those results, I'd think to myself, well, hey, I've got nothing to lose here. I might as well come and give this a crack. And do you think people sort of have that attitude, or they're still a bit, yeah, I don't know about not eating all day?
Yeah, I think I do think for a lot of people, especially our type 2 diabetics, so often they're middle age and they've often been overweight for a long time. So quite often these people, when I see them, they've already tried so many diets, they've already tried so much exercise and over many years often. And then they've obviously then ended up type 2 diabetic and they've been given medication after medication, and then obviously insulin as well is often prescribed. So for these people, I think they lose a bit of hope. And I think you can see why. I mean, they've tried this before. They've tried changing their lifestyle. And yes, this is very different, but it's just another thing, right? So is this just going to be another failure for them? And I think that can be a little bit of the mental block that I do see with patients, is that here we go again. I've tried this before. I've had nurses and doctors tell me for years. And while the advice is slightly different, it is still lifestyle advice. So I think that can be a big mental block for people. And I would say the majority of those who struggle, it is because of that. You know, but for those who are motivated, they often find it quite easy after the first week or two and they stick with it. And as soon as they start seeing results, that gives them that lift to carry on.
Yeah, the qualification for fasting for me, Sarah, personally, has been the fact that I've been able to maintain the weight loss now for well over 2 years. And that's when I sort of thought to myself, you know, if I can maintain this weight loss, getting the weight off is one thing, right? Keeping it off is a totally different thing. As you know, it's a different mindset in that. Now, let's talk about that for a minute with your own personal story, maintaining. Just tell us where you're up to with that. And if you think maintaining is slightly different and how you sort of apply the maintenance compared to what you did when you actually lost that 20 kilos.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the maintenance, I think, is different in that I'm probably a lot more relaxed now than I used to be. You know, I can have, I still generally have that one meal a day. But, you know, if we have a family dinner on a Saturday, fine, we just have the family dinner. It's a lot more relaxed. If I only get a 16-hour fast on a Saturday night, no problem. You know, I think previously, you know, I'd go out and I wouldn't eat at all if I wanted to get that fast in for whatever reason. Whereas now I sort of am a bit more flexible with it. And I think that's quite nice. There's a little bit more freedom. But you're still getting, you know, phenomenal fasts in every week. You know, I feel great. Sometimes I'll still do a 26, 28-hour fast just because I finished early one day and I got busy the next and I just keep going. And then, you know, I'll eat dinner instead of lunch. So quite often I'll end up doing those, a longer fast. But then likewise, if something's going on and we're, you know, whatever we're doing, then it's okay if I only do a shorter fast too.
Yeah, I think the flexibility of fasting is a huge point for a lot of people that do it. And then I find with maintaining now, the longer I go, the more intuitive type of faster I've become in terms of I'm listening to my body more, I'm in tune with my hunger signals. And, you know, if one day it's 16 hours, it's 16 hours. If the next day it's 18, 20, etc. I don't tend to look at the clock or have any set sort of times now. They sort of vary a fair bit. Do you find that you're sort of moving more into that sort of phase of intuitive sort of type of eating?
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely agree with that. I do still use a fasting app though. And do you know, I don't know why. Maybe I just quite like to know what's going on, or I don't know. I quite enjoy my fasting app. But yeah, I do find that I we'll be doing something and I think actually I'm not hungry. You know, it'll be Saturday morning, my husband might break his fast early for brunch with the kids or something, and I think, oh, I'm actually not hungry. I've fasted for 18 hours, but I'm not hungry, so I won't eat. Whereas I think when I first started, it would get to 18 hours, and even if I wasn't hungry, I'd potentially eat. So you do learn that sort of listening to your body. You know, and I don't often have times where I struggle. Very, very rarely would I have a day where I'm quite hungry and struggling. And I think it just becomes your way of life. Your body gets a bit more in tune and everything just flows and it feels normal. So, yeah, really good.
Yeah, it is. It's just part of your daily existence, really. I mean, most days I forget that I'm even fasting. Like, I actually haven't even thought about it much till we've just been talking about it now. I mean, my window opens here in a couple of hours' time, but all day today I've been kept busy. So let's talk about some of the struggles people have with IF. I mean, you're obviously very experienced. I know that you privately coach people. You run some courses for members of your group, which I know are held in very high regard. So when people say to me, oh, you know, Graham, I went away on the weekend and I ate a pizza and I did this and I ate two donuts, now my weight's up 3 pounds on a Monday, I'm going to have to do a 50-hour fast. What would you say to somebody that thought that they had to do a very long fast to sort of almost beat themselves up over it?
Yeah, I really try and avoid that. And I think that's a little bit of that diet mentality, and it almost will set you up to fail. I think it's really important to realize that this is a lifestyle that you are going to commit to long term, if not forever. So one day, even in a year, one day in 365 days is really not an issue. And I try and say to people, look, okay, you slipped up, you didn't fast all weekend, you ate out all day, you had a few drinks, whatever it was, start again. Start fasting. What's the time? It's 7 o'clock at night. Start now. Don't worry about it. You don't have to start Monday. Monday's a real diet day. So actually, the big reason I don't do my courses on a Monday is because we're trying to get away from that dieting. Everyone wants to start fresh on Monday. Well, there's no reason we can't start today and tonight or Sunday night or Monday or whatever day it is of the week. So just, you know, I do say to people, look, okay, you slipped up, start again, start now. You know, even for people who fall off the wagon completely and having just come through the festive season, that's probably the most common time that people really just jump off that wagon entirely. And I say to them, look, you know, okay, you were doing one meal a day through November, but now you've had a month off, back it up, start again at 16 hours for a couple of weeks and then go. You know, you don't have to jump right back in at that 20, 40, whatever hour fast. And I think trying to do a really long fast because you slipped up, will often set you to fail, because often you've slipped up with high carbohydrate foods and probably excess, which means the next fast can often be a little bit more of a struggle. And if you're trying to aim to do a 50-hour fast because of that, probably by hour 20, you're really going to be white-knuckling it. So I think I just say to people, look, start again. Just start again. And we don't need to worry about, you know, making up for it or anything like that.
Yeah, so when you get a message from one of your clients or somebody in your group that's doing your course, say, oh, Sarah, I'm really struggling here, you know, what are some of the places that you tell them to look first? Do you sort of have some steps of self-examination?
Yeah, so always my first question is it always a clean fast? Because if it's not, that's your first thing we need to sort out. Then we look at what's going on around the fast, because fasting on its own is great, but actually if you're not sleeping, people often prop up fatigue with calories. So if you're not sleeping well, then you're going to start to really struggle through those mornings with no food, because you're so used to adding some sugar and calories to help with the fatigue. So we need to look at sleep, and stress is another one as well. So we talk about those two things as well. I often check those. And quite often someone will come back and say, yeah, well, actually I haven't slept in 3 weeks. Well, we need to fix that before we try and get you back onto your one meal a day. We then start to look at what their window is doing. Like you've been fasting really great for the last 6 months and suddenly it's a real struggle and you're putting on weight or your weight's stalled. What's going on with your window? You're still doing your 20-hour fast, but have you added dessert every night? Have you added wine every night? Have you, you know, changed the way you're eating or what's going on there? So that's when we start to examine that. And then we just sort of individualize for that person and make some goals and look at what we can do to change things and make it work better. And that might just be that they go to bed earlier and get a better sleep so that they're not tired and not craving sugary coffee at 6 a.m.
Yeah, I think sleep's very important. I think it's very, very important, because when you're tired, you do feel crappy and you feel like, you know, you want to eat. And it's the same with alcohol. And I always say to people, don't underestimate what damage a beverage can do, even in a 4 or 5 hour eating window. I mean, if you're having 4 or 5 beers, you feel a bit dusty the next day. I know when I used to have some big nights, the only two words you could get out of me was chips and Coke the next day, because and that's basically all I could think about. But yeah, so alcohol, we haven't really talked about that. And let's just rewind back to treating your patients. How does alcohol play a part with somebody that's got type 2 diabetes?
So quite often alcohol can increase their blood sugar, it does depend a bit on what they're drinking, but often they come with sort of a sugary beverage and just alcohol alone can increase blood sugar. But for my patients, I tend to say to them, look, you can have a drink or two through the week. If that's part of your routine, then carry on. But I always caution them to be a little bit aware of what's happening the next day. So if they have 3 wines on a Thursday night and they find Friday's always a struggle, chances are it's the 3 wines they've had the night before. So we do talk a bit about that. And I also say to them, look, if you're stalling and your progress isn't great and you do drink a little bit, then we need to look at perhaps delaying that or cutting it back anyway. Most people can get away with a couple of drinks through the week and be okay. But for those who drink a lot or who drink every night or have big, big weekends, they often do see they struggle with their progress.
Yeah, and of course we know you have a few drinks and the next thing you want to get on the munchies and she's all a downhill spiral, isn't it? But Sarah, I really thank you for all the information you've given us today, and I can't commend you highly enough for the work that you're doing in New Zealand. Your own journey is inspiring. I mean, losing 20 kilos or 44 pounds for our North American listeners, that's a lot of weight. So have you found for yourself personally that intermittent fasting has changed your life for Sarah Cole?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, personally, physically, I'm better. I was getting things like heartburn. I struggled quite a bit with fatigue back then, and I think that my energy, my sleep. I obviously don't get the heartburn anymore. All of those things really improved. And, you know, being able to lose that weight and run around with the kids. And one of the big things I love now is the clothes I wear. And I have a real motto of I only wear what I love. Whereas, you know, before I lost the weight, I wore what fit and what was comfortable. So often it was stretchy black tights or, you know, everything was black or dark colors. I'd never wear horizontal stripes, whereas now my wardrobe's full of color and flowers and horizontal stripes. And I love that. And I, you know, I think that's a big thing for me. And just being able to run around with the kids and keep up with them and not have to worry so much has been really nice. But of course, professionally, it's changed my life too, because I can now help people that I never really felt I could help before. I mean, sure, we were propping them up with medication, but I just, you know, I just didn't feel that was helpful. Whereas now we make a real difference, and it's so inspiring to hear people's stories. I love your story, Graham. I think it's really inspirational. I love your book, and I like to tell people about your book and get them to read it, because it's just such a good story. And sharing those journeys with people is just such a neat experience. So, yeah, it definitely changed my life.
Oh, that's fantastic, and thank you for that. And, yeah, it's changed mine too in so many ways. And getting to share our story like what I'm doing with the podcast and the book is great, but what you're doing at the coalface with people, you know, real-life emergencies and having something like type 2 diabetes, I can't imagine what that's even like. And then being able to have a chance to reverse it through intermittent fasting and doing what you're doing down in New Zealand, that's just fabulous. And I really do hope that you go on and you do document it, and you write a book and you get it out there, because people really need to hear about this. And I think people right around the world need to hear more about Sarah Cole. So who knows what you might do in the future, Sarah. But before we go today, I'd just like to draw on your experience as a faster. And I always like to ask people at the end just some words of advice and wisdom about how to get started with IF and just some motivational words around that.
Yeah, great. I think there's very few people who shouldn't fast. So it's the children, pregnant women and breastfeeding, anyone with a diagnosed eating disorder. I wouldn't put a frail elderly person on fasting either, but I think for almost everyone else, within reason, and perhaps some will need to check with their doctor, but you should be fasting. I mean, the studies show that it's so good for so much. So even if you're not diabetic, even if you're not morbidly obese, it is so good at prevention of some cancers. It's showing really good signs of helping with dementia and Alzheimer's. You know, there's just so much that we can gain from this. So get on board, start slowly. If you've got a buddy or a group you can join, or some support people around it is helpful, but it's not, you know, you don't have to. Some people prefer to go it alone. But yeah, start slow, get on that 16 hours, hang in there for a couple of weeks. It can be a little bit tough, but once you start seeing the benefits, it's so worth it.
Fantastic advice. Thank you so much, Sarah. And I can't wait to get over to New Zealand and interview yourself and some of your patients for the Fasting Highway documentary that we're going to be doing in the future. And I wish you every bit of success. And thank you for joining me here today on the Fasting Highway.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure, Graham.
Fantastic. And say hello to everybody in the New Zealand Intermittent Fasting Group too. Keep up the good work. Okay, bye.
Thanks, Graham. See you.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. Really enjoyed that chat with you, and I think you gave a great insight not only into your own journey, but that work that you're doing in the medical clinic in New Zealand with type 2 diabetes patients with intermittent fasting is simply amazing. And as I said in the podcast, the world really needs to know more about that, and also Sarah Cull. And I think everybody in New Zealand is so, so proud of you that knows you, and we thank you for everything that you've done and your group, and everything is amazing. So thank you, Sarah. We look forward to catching up with you again in the future. Also, folks, as we mentioned there in the pre-intro, if you are interested in my own story, you can find my book that we mentioned in the podcast there, The Fasting Highway. on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. If you are in Australia or New Zealand, you can get it at the website, www.thefastinghighway.com. Anyway, until next week, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.